going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a solemn edition of WTF.
Prime time!
And hold your applause for a second, people. Hold your applause. All right, let's all moment of silence, because today we have lost a very good friend. I didn't know him very long, but some people have known this unfortunate individual for a good 12 years now. A bit of fond farewell to the future of Final Cut Pro. But that aside, we also got some Transformers Prime to talk about today, so let's try to get onto the brighter side of life here. With me today is Aaron.
Yes, I am, somehow.
Welcome back.
Yeah. 1,000 yards of concrete today, plus.
Is that what you put people into?
Maybe.
They were all formed into the shape of shoes.
Also here with us today is Gog Dog.
Been a few weeks, huh? It feels a little weird, but
yeah,
in a good way.
Another one of those programming pauses. I'm cool with it, because doing two recordings a week can get a little bit taxing after a little while. So it's nice to have a breather now and then.
Yeah, or like yeah. Six in a week.
Yeah. So this episode, Operation Breakdown, I should point out, this is also kind of yet another WTF at BotCon retrospect, because this was aired at BotCon. Me and Gog saw it at BotCon. Aaron, did you go to that panel? Or what were you
doing?
No,
I went and got tacos, because that looked like it was going to a boring panel with
hella tacos?
Nobody on it that I really wanted to see. Yes, we got hella tacos.
Good. Hella dull tacos?
Yes. That was the California food experience I got. I didn't get the In-N-Out, but I got
Del
Taco.
Did you see Taco Santa?
I don't know. There may have been a Taco Santa there.
Does anyone really see Taco Santa, or you just hear Taco Santa? You're the little
You see him in the love.
That's true.
And taco sauce packets.
I have a couple of those. I tried to take those back with me, but then I was like, these are going to explode in the plane, and I don't have a bag to put them in. So I left them for the housekeeping to find and enjoy. But Operation Breakdown, it was a cool episode for various reasons. Number one, Breakdown finally got to have a little bit of spotlight time. He's been around for a couple episodes, but he's often been relegated to a bit of a background role, or when he has been out there doing stuff in the front line of the battlefield, he hasn't really been saying much. So I like this episode because Adam Baldwin got to finally have a little bit of scripting time to himself. This was also cool because Mech finally showed their true nature and their true potential as a threat. And this was also cool because this was a kind of a grim episode. I remember when we watched it at BotCon, after it was done, I was like, man, some of that stuff was pretty grisly. Also, at BotCon, it was fun to watch because it took like 15 minutes for them to stop having the lights in the room turn on and off while we were trying to watch the episode on that PlayStation 3.
Yeah, we had a bit of a disco going on there.
Yeah, and I was laughing about it when it was happening. Some people were kind of going like, oh, man, but I was just kind of chuckling. And I felt a little bit bad because I could tell that it was a case that just the lighting controls in that room were not as simple as having a button to press. But it was kind of amusing. It's something I always remember.
Yeah, it was kind of amusing because Brian Savage at one point said, yeah, we need the audio-visual guy here. I think he was an employee of the venue, and it took a guy who has experience basically working real-time mixing board and video software and everything to come and turn the lights off.
Yes.
But, I mean, nothing against Brian.
God,
they had like touch screen.
Just go click.
Oh. Yeah, they had like multiple touchscreen controls for all the lighting and everything. So
there were at least 8 control pads in that room for the lighting. And then apparently, as far as I could tell, there was also a lighting control up front at their mixing board they were using for their projector and for the microphones.
Yeah, it almost looked as if when they turned them off, that it somehow like set for a motion capture or motion detector to turn it back on. So it turned off for a couple minutes, and as soon as it saw any movement, they came right back on. But that was just what it looked like. I don't know.
I do know that some convention centers can get weird because each one of those, because that big room that we were in can probably be divided up into like 6 or 8 smaller rooms, each with its own controls. Mm-hmm. So there's got to be some logic in there of which panels are open and closed and get crazy stuff, and if it thinks something's open, maybe it was going crazy. But that has nothing to do with Transformers Prime.
It's all part of our BotCon experience relating to this episode, so we're tying it all together here. First point I'd like to bring up about this episode for discussion would be the threat of mech, the stuff Silas is doing. He has the equipment to take down and capture a Transformer the size of Breakdown. He's got the team that's able to shut off Breakdown's pain receptors, open him up, and start taking data out. And at the end of this episode, he's got enough data apparently to start something called Project Chimera, so that they can take control of the walking machines and have their dominion over all technology. Because you know, mech is anything but normal, or whatever that line was. So I kind of enjoyed this because this was everything I was hoping for from mech after their debut episode. I was hoping they would be a threat to both Autobots and Decepticons, and something that would blur the lines, and they wouldn't just be like, oh, we're bad guy humans who are friends with Decepticons because they're bad guys too. So I really enjoyed where this episode took mech, and it sounds like it's going to go a whole lot farther in the direction I like. Gog, how about you? What do you think of mech?
Oh, I absolutely agree. Very sinister. I really like Silas's character. He's just every line is just that Clancy Brown delivers for the character is just so like he makes every word count. It's he lets you know up front with no reservations about what he is going to do, what his intentions are, and it's just like I don't know, like he almost maybe should turn it down a little bit because he makes him everything he says is so serious and sinister that it's like. Even the good guys and bad guys will join forces just to stop you because you just sound so intent on destroying me. But and you haven't even done it yet. You've just told me what you're going to do, and I'm like, ah, I can't let that happen. We got to stop that. It's not like some idle threat. Like it just he's like, oh man, this Silas guy.
He's a pretty yes. legitimate supervillain.
He should probably tone down his trash talking because it's getting people so riled up that they're already ready to stop him before he does anything. It's like so far, yeah. I think this might be some of the best portrayal of human villains in a Transformers franchise that I've seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have yet to see where they're going to go with that. They're obviously leading towards something big, but so far the Silas character is great.
He's very legitimate. And you know, as a supervillain, I mean, he pulled out a dude's eye, left it on a fountain, and then hooked it up so he could use it to talk to them afterwards with the classic hands behind his back, looking away from the camera, turn around and go like, ah, Optimus Prime. It's like, oh, smooth operator. Aaron.
Yeah, at first I thought that was just like a recording, since you got the evil mad scientist with goggles or all that you can see out of Breakdown as they were drilling out his eye. And so, you know, they did the whole, well, you know, we'll see the last thing that the eyeball saw and started doing that and then had that turn around. And I thought, oh, okay, yeah, that's kind of creepy that he knew that they'd do that. Oh, no, it's a two-way link. That's even more messed up, just like barring a dude's eyeball for baiting purposes.
Yeah, it was when we saw it at BotCon, just when I realized that was his eyeball and the way that was being, and the fact they said it's Breakdown's eye, and it was basically a sphere with like a cord just kind of hanging on the back. I was like, oh man, like
and this one thing I've enjoyed about this series, and I mean they've always gotten away with it to some degree. For just because of the fact that they're robots, but like they're really doing some violent things to the characters that you couldn't get away with them being humans, like pulling out organs and just straight, I mean, just violent deaths in some cases.
Yeah.
And so it's nothing super crazy, but yeah, I mean, they pulled out a dude's eye and left it on basically a pedestal for someone else to find. And it was shaped like an eye. Yeah. Instead of having little veins on the back, he had wires. And it was like, oh, like, yeah. They really are, I think, at least pushing it as far as what they would intend it to be for just a kid's show.
Aaron, any other thoughts about mech and what they did on your end?
just to have the capabilities that they do, because apparently at some point they abandoned the whole that Russian peninsula that the name escapes me, the Kamchatka. Sorry, any Russian listeners we may have, a whole lot of consonants, and so they've just. They've just taken up residence on this peninsula that I think I did a quick wiki the first time I looked through, and there's like 600,000 people that live there, but no, they just took over.
Kamchatka?
Kamchatka, yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
And so now they're just hanging out in the whole peninsula or something, but to do that and then to use the eyeball, which is tech that they drilled out as bait for a bomb to take care of anybody else that may show up. It's like layers of nefarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing that I would say maybe against mech, and I have a feeling this is probably going to change in future episodes, but outside of that booby trap, they did not seem equipped to fight even a single Cybertronian in this case. Mm-hmm. The first time we saw them when they were what was it, like convoy or something?
Yeah.
They basically were, their only defense was the fact that they were in a convoy that had to remain moving, and so they were doing a whole Fast and Furious thing while they were on wheels, and the Cybertronians couldn't really reveal themselves. Mm-hmm. So they had a little bit of a buffer there. But in this case it was just bulkhead under the cover of night, and their entire force was just showering them with bullets, and it was like mosquitoes nipping at them. They just brushed it off. They didn't care. With the exception of the helicopter-fired whatever
like
gun.
Like super gun thing.
Yeah.
You can tell it's hardcore because it has started having like energy lines come into it before it shot.
Well, I'm pretty sure that was the same, because I rewatched it just to make sure, and it looked like it was the same as the one that hit Breakdown in the beginning, the one that neutralized him.
Yeah.
Because the beam effect was the same. So it was just like some sort of energy railgun, something propelled thing that hit him in the chest. But I mean, outside of that, they didn't seem to have any means of combating even a single Cybertronian. So, and like I said, now that they've actually dissected and gotten a bit of information from Breakdown, I have a feeling that's probably going to change after this episode. But I would say that was my only complaint. Like, they talk all this trash on how how they have the greatest technology, and they won't settle for anything. And they're like now that they know these Cybertronians are out there, they're still just kind of using like run of the mill machine guns that are really doing nothing.
I'm sure it didn't help that they were also using them against Bulkhead and Breakdown, who are
for sure,
being two of the biggest and toughest guys.
Yeah. I could see that just as the fact that, you know, they're working on the tech, trying to get stuff up to that level. Yeah, you could have something in an emplacement or on a helicopter, but you don't have it manned portable yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just like
that super gun of theirs did seem to need to be mounted underneath a helicopter,
right?
As opposed to something they could just hand out as rifles to their soldiers. But as you said, you know, they have Transformer technology data a lot more so than they had before, and Project Chimera, whatever that is apparently under development now. I just wanted to throw one more thing out about the whole mech thing. There were two moments I distinctly remember from the BotCon viewing where the audience had reactions. The first one being the commercial cut where the drill is just coming straight towards our own point of view and filling it. A lot of the audience did actually wince during that at BotCon, because that was a pretty rough thing to show, I think, to show the POV of someone getting their own eye drilled out. Another one that got a laugh from the crowd at BotCon was when the bomb happened, and Silas, you know, just like a Bond villain, literally just told them, by the way, there's a bomb. He's like, you might not want to stand your ground. And then Prime went like, it's a trap! And the whole audience just burst out laughing.
Yeah,
the funny part about that scene that I noticed the second time I watched it was Prime just goes, it's a trap! And everybody kind of stands there looking at it. And then RC says, is this the kind of trap that is a rollout moment? And Prime goes, evacuate! Or something, and runs. And it's like, RC's like, why are we standing here again? And Prime's like, oh yeah, we should run.
Yeah.
It was a pretty funny moment to me.
Yeah, I just remember the audience reaction to that was was pretty good.
Yeah, but that was a classic. That was a classic. It's a trap moment.
Moving along, let's bring up something else. Gog, have you got something you'd like to talk about?
Well, we talked about mech. Let's talk about Breakdown.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this episode was fun just because, like you said earlier, we finally got some more character for Breakdown, because the past few episodes he's in, he's had like a couple of words. Breakdown has definitely been around since was it Deus Ex Machina? Mm-hmm. A couple times in the fight, like when they fought in the Arctic and all that, or Antarctic, wherever they were. But they definitely. He had one episode where he said a couple words. I think he had one where he grunted. So it's nice to finally get Adam Baldwin in there voicing the character. I liked Breakdown in this. The thing that I'm really hoping for is that they expound upon this. And we actually got, because Breakdown has been basically portrayed as Bulkhead's archenemy. Would love to see Bulkhead die. We see him in the beginning had every intentions of killing him. Bulkhead lost the fight.
Yeah,
I like that too, because we've always seen them kind of be enemies, but in typical 80s cartoon fashion, the good guy generally, you know, pulls ahead and wins. Mm-hmm. Even though the bad guy is stated to be basically like his match or whatever. It doesn't ever play out like that, so it was good to finally see. Like, if it wasn't for Mech, Bulkhead would have died. So, Breakdown is definitely a force to be reckoned with. But I liked how he, even when at the end, when Starscream basically gives him the old ultimatum that it's you need to decide right now: are you gonna side with this Autobot and be a traitor, or are you gonna just finish this so we can go home? Breakdown definitely hesitated. He was even arguing, like, look, this guy just saved my life. Like, there was a little bit of, for lack of a better term, humanity in there. Mm-hmm. I almost wonder too, because he's like, well, sorry, buddy, it's either you or me, and it's not going to be me. He just kind of pulled out his hammer and swung. Again, this might just be reading into it a little more, because we're viewing this as people in a realized world where it's just a script on paper, but it almost seemed as if he didn't necessarily give it his all, because he didn't. He was countered pretty easily.
Yeah,
and it makes me wonder if there was a little bit in there where he had to make it look good, but didn't really want Bulkhead to die under these circumstances. Yeah. But at the same time, he did kind of say, "Sorry, buddy." So I hope it's not just a sorry buddy and then a character reset where the next episode begins in the same situation it was. I hope that this comes up, even if it's only in a small degree later. But I don't necessarily... I mean, there's a lot of theories whenever stuff like this happens, and I don't know necessarily that Breakdown should convert to being an Autobot. There's a lot of people that feel that way. I would just like to see him maybe get a little bit of a conscience after this and just show some character development. Yeah, remain a Decepticon, but maybe be like the Thundercracker in G1, where he starts questioning some of the things that are happening because of a seed that was planted because someone spared his life when he didn't think that something like that was possible. And I'd like to see that expounded on. Only time will tell, but...
Well, especially with the fact that it was such a big surprise that it was the Autobots that were coming to his rescue, not the Decepticons. That, you know, the people that are first to jump to his aid are his enemies. You know, why are you doing that? That doesn't make sense. Well, okay, and I kind of saw the whole thing, at least, you know, with Starscream telling him that he had to take out Bulkhead, at least maybe like an honor in the moment thing of, hey, you know, any other time, and yeah, but I mean, this dude saved me. You know, tomorrow when we meet again, yeah, it's on like Donkey Kong, for the horrible phrase that Nintendo's trying to copyright. But, you know, go for something like that. So I think it could go a ways into definitely having him maybe just go neutral and kind of be like, well, whatever.
Well, we also got to figure out, because he is Knockout's buddy. And that's the one interaction we didn't see this episode was anything from Knockout. So if this does have ramifications, and I think it will, I'm curious to see how the interplay between Breakdown and Knockout works out in future as well.
Yeah, and going off exactly that, because the ultimatum Starscream gave him, he said, you know, there's going to be a time when you're going to need to choose. And Breakdown is like, you mean between the Autobots and the Decepticons? As if he was going to say, like, look, you know, just because I wanted to spare the guy's life one time doesn't mean I'm going to convert. Like, that. Like if he had time to finish his thought, that's what he would have said. Starscream's like, no, between me and Megatron. And the fact that Knockout has already kind of, at least before Megatron came back, Knockout had kind of pledged himself to Starscream. We have yet to see if that alliance is still going to be in play after Megatron has been revived, but that's cool too, because I mean we'll get into more of the whole Starscream thing later, but yeah, I mean it's gonna be interesting, like you said, with that, because Breakdown is basically, this is kind of the first time Starscream has directly approached Breakdown in the same way that he approached Knockdown. It's like Starscream's starting to get desperate for followers and support.
Yeah.
But like I said, we can go more into detail about that later. But a couple more things about Breakdown. One thing I never noticed is, compared to most of the other Transformers in this show, like Breakdown's face is very simple in G1. Because we've spoken so many times about how all the Transformers like have these really unique and highly detailed eyes, especially if you watch it in HD. And Breakdown is just flat plate metal face and just cell shaded eye, like that's it, like that's his face, and I like that. I mean, it's just, again, it adds more personality with him, and I don't know, I'm sure some people have noticed that long since Deus Ex Machina, but it was something that just kind of hit me. It's like his unique style isn't like the big bug eye or the telescopic ring. It's just a cel-shaded lens.
So. But it's also, it wasn't until this episode that Breakdown even got to do much emoting. And so this episode, like, one of the tour de forces animation-wise for him was the various little twitches he was doing while he was strapped down on the operating table.
If
you watch that sequence, there are a lot of times, like, he doesn't actually show fear, really. But there are times where, especially when that drill is getting much closer, he does start to twitch a little bit. You know,
For sure.
And not
standard apprehension anybody's having as a giant drill is aimed at your eyeball.
Exactly. It's not like he's suddenly freaking out and go like, oh no, but you know, a drill is coming towards his face, and so he's like starting to go like, nah! Like, you know, the anticipation of that drill going into his head kind of thing.
And I really hope too that the fact that Breakdown is voiced by
Adam Baldwin.
Adam Baldwin. I always get all those A Baldwins mixed up. Mr. Adam Baldwin. I hope the fact that he's providing the voice for Breakdown is not one of the things that is contributing to the fact that we don't get a lot of Breakdown until it's a Breakdown-centric episode, and I hope that he starts playing a role. While he may be slightly less interesting than Knockout, I still, especially after this episode, Breakdown is a good character, and and he's definitely being set up, like I said before, to kind of be now the Thundercracker of the Decepticons, and I hope that the fact that he's voiced by a pseudo superstar is not going to hurt his character development just because of kind of behind the scenes voice actor stuff.
What we need now is, they've both had their own episodes. Now we need the Breakdown and Knockout duo episode, the one that fleshes them out and what their relationship really is. Like, that's the episode we need next, I think.
Or even my fantasy mind goes to the breakup of the two of them.
That too. Yeah, who knows if that happens. Because, you know, Breakdown, as far as we'd seen, was pretty just like, he'll do what he's told to do. When he decides, when Knockout says take off, he's like, all right, I'm out of here. I'm curious to see what their interplay will be like in future. I have a little thing I can drop about Breakdown as well, and this is based entirely on something that I got at BotCon. One of the artists for Transformers Prime, a bunch of the artists were sitting around doing autographs, and they were also doing sketches. So, because we had just seen the episode, you know, I said, hey, can you draw me a breakdown? And the guy said, oh, I actually haven't drawn breakdown for anybody for the whole show. So he starts drawing it, and he stops, and he goes, like, what episode did they show you yesterday? And I was like, oh, Operation Breakdown. So he's like, oh, so you know he lost his eye. I was like, yeah. So when he drew breakdown, it was breakdown with a patch over his eye, which makes me think that, especially since the Autobots have his eye, that breakdown might not actually have his eye back the next time we see him.
That's cool. And that's what I wanted them to do with Knockout. That's what I wanted them to do with Knockout when Starscream, quote unquote, punished him by basically scratching his face. I wanted that to show up for at least an episode.
Yeah.
And the fact that it kind of got reset, I was a little disappointed. I understood why. It wasn't a big deal. But I was hoping for that, but I think that's kind of cool for...
Like, this is in no way a confirmation. It's just that when I asked the Transformers Prime guys to draw me a mugshot of Breakdown, they asked me if I saw this episode, and then they drew him with an eye patch. Yeah. So I have a feeling that there's a decent chance that this is going to be a lasting thing on him, which could also... And because of that, that also has me thinking this could have lasting effects on his character development, too.
Very cool. Yeah, I look forward to finding out.
I could not bring that up in any of our BotCon coverage because I didn't, you know, because this episode hadn't aired yet, so I'd been holding on to that for the last couple weeks.
Feel better now?
I feel so much better. Which leads to the question, when his toy eventually comes out, will it have one eye or two? I think that'll also...
So was that a drawing that you got?
Yeah, they drew it on a poster for me.
You still have it?
Yeah, it's rolled up with all my other posters. I gotta dig them out.
When you get a chance... At the very least, I mean, if you don't want to tweet it or whatever, at least snap a picture and show me.
Oh, yeah, no worries.
Because I want to see it now.
It's really funny. He had to stop for a little while because everyone had been asking him to draw, you know, all the other main characters of Prime, that he had to pause to try to remember what Breakdown actually looked like. And that's when he hit the thing where he's like, oh, and have you seen this episode yet? And I was like, yeah. So I felt like I may have gotten the only Breakdown sketch of the show. So it also felt pretty good.
Did you get a Prowl sketch at that show? Because I did.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I get a Prowl sketch, because I got Prowls everywhere.
Yes.
So Breakdown definitely was a big force in this episode, and also many props to the voice acting, because it didn't get too hammy. It didn't get too far in the whole thing of, I don't know what to do, or why are you helping me? Or, you know, like, oh, I'm so afraid, you're going to rip my eye out. Like, he really played the character well of being this tough guy who, to the very end, you know, he's strapped down with a drill coming to his face, and he's still telling the humans, like, you let me go and maybe I won't kill you. I really enjoyed Breakdown as a character in this episode. Aaron, what would you like to bring up?
I can go for a light topic of RC Pink Quest 2011.
Oh, I didn't even look. What?
No pink.
No pink this time.
No pink this time.
This is the weirdest thing to track in a TV show in a long time.
She didn't get a whole lot of airtime, but I did check the one time, and unless it was very, very, very dark surroundings...
This has got to be intentional at this point. This is like if you're setting up a stage, and then like this happened at a stage show I've been watching for a while that just ended the other night. There was this they had a set they used every night for 20 weeks, and every now and then they'd flip the flowers in the background inside the vase to be upside down. And eventually, a friend of mine asked them, "Why are the flowers upside down?" They said, "Oh, we just did that to see if anyone would notice." So I think this got to be they're just like, hey. Every now and then, just put the pink on her and see if anyone notices.
Man, did anyone ask the question about that at the Prime panel?
I haven't checked out any footage of the panel yet, so I know that panel was actually recorded, because that one, they didn't have a rule on it, so there's YouTube videos of it. I should check those out.
I just break it all down to the fact that, you know, women like to switch up their outfits once in a while, so she probably has multiple sets of, like, breastplate armor and shoulder armor that swaps out, and so she likes to, you know... After mission, she changes it out, so she's got to switch it up, and she's got a couple pairs with the black parts and a couple pairs with the pink parts.
I really hope the toy...
Sometimes she's feeling girly and wants the pink, and sometimes she's feeling emo and wants the black.
I really hope the toy is released in a 50-50 with this as a variant.
I will buy both, I swear to God. I'll buy both.
Yeah, but there's no way to tell from the outside it's a random paint app.
No, this will be like Crankcase. You got to look on the back for the product code.
No date stamp. No, it's got to be completely blind pack.
I'll buy a case of RCs, please.
Yeah, the pink is probably like is the outfit that she wears when she's not planning on going out on a mission, and the black is like her tactical suit. And
that's
literally
not
the
her
only
murdering
difference
outfit.
Is the color. No.
Man. All right, well, we'll be back with more on this quest next prime time. My own next topic I could bring up would be another big obvious one, which is Bulkhead. This episode was also developmental for Bulkhead. We got to see more of his rivalry with Breakdown. We got to see exactly what he thinks of Breakdown, which is that I don't care if the humans rip him apart. I don't, that guy's done nasty stuff. And then Bulkhead did, you know, suck it up and go help him out. And for, a fantastic reason of you've got to be the one to take him out, not these humans.
He still had the best line.
But Marco?
Don't wanna.
Oh.
And that was said with all the petulance of a 3-year-old.
Kevin Michael Richardson is a powerful voice actor, is all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Especially having seen him in person. That guy is subject to more in-jokes than I've ever seen someone put up with at a panel. But I really enjoyed just the whole thing of, and this is the second time this has happened in the series now. This time it happened to an Autobot, which is like, don't you want to be the one to take him out? Because this happened with Megatron, back when Megatron was contacted to save Optimus Prime. So Bulkhead was great in this episode as well. I liked also that you know, at the end he recognized every one of the Transformers are starting to recognize mech for the threat that they are, and they aren't really pulling punches, because Bulkhead was, I'm pretty sure some of those dudes didn't walk away from that fight without a lot of help, because he was swinging the wrecking balls around all over the place.
Yeah, we didn't even mention that either, because Breakdown threw the car into the helicopter.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was...
They didn't
walk
away from that.
That was the one time I'm like, okay, they kind of showed those guys, you know, they got inside the car before anything happened, so surely they're... That's a helicopter. That's... Okay. they had the secret magic eject button.
Guess what?
The helicopter right next to the reverse hack laptop button.
I think that the mech soldiers are being treated as almost as expendable as the Erraticons.
Yeah.
Who are now apparently Viacons. I'll just throw it out there.
But on the other hand, I hear a lot of people like freak out about like whenever anybody dies in an episode, and like I don't think we should make, I mean, maybe this sounds a little old, but like I don't think it's that big a deal. I mean, it's battle, like that kind of stuff happens, and
I think the stakes have kind been of set up really well.
Yeah, but it's also refreshing, and like in the like the 80s cartoons, everybody just shoots at each other and nothing ever happens, so it's kind of refreshing to see the fact that it's portrayed somewhat realistically, and like that's that. It's
thing is the fact that they don't focus on the deaths. Which is why, you know, you have the dude crawl out of the car, and you're like, oh, okay, well, they're all getting out of the car. And then you don't have to say to kids, hey, yeah, they're killing someone. It's just, oh, no, see, they got out. Oh, okay.
So I think also, like, there's certain levels of it where you gotta step back for a second. Like, I mean, if someone out there's freaking out because Breakdown threw a car with two mech soldiers in it at a helicopter being piloted by a mech pilot, and there was a massive explosion that likely did not treat those mech operatives very well... Breakdown is also a Decepticon who in this episode was stated to have done some pretty horrible things in the past. Yeah. As for Bulkhead, these are humans who have shown a complete willingness to literally kidnap and dissect Transformers for the sake of using all their pieces to upgrade their own equipment. So that to me is a legitimization of deadly force. Because they want to cannibalize their bodies. And you know, and they didn't outright show Bulkhead like smushing people into the floor into paste. It's just that I know.
Yeah, well, they can't.
Yeah, yeah.
What happened.
I know that they did show at least one mech soldier get a face full of a wrecking ball and just go flying off screen. And I was like, yeah, that's no body armor in the world is going to prevent you from having at least a small fracture from that kind of encounter
or a major concussion.
Yeah.
At that point, you're playing the mass game.
Yeah.
That has a whole lot more mass than you do.
So long as
you're going to move.
So long as the mech suit fills with gel, you know, if I don't know if you guys have heard about Halo, but if you got a suit of armor, as long as it fills with gel, you can survive any fall and any impact.
Yeah. Including extra atmospheric.
But yeah, Bulkhead was doing some good stuff in this one, and by extension, Miko was also. I'm starting to really warm up to Miko's like ludicrous moral messages she gives. Like, don't save him because it's the right thing to do. Save him so you can kick his ass later. And I was like,
Yeah, but it was more of a, it was more of like a comic book thing. Like, he's your arch enemy. Like you should be the one to beat him. Like, not those guys.
But in a lot of other kids' cartoons, I think the habit would be for her to say, he may be your arch enemy, but he's also a living thing and you must go save him. And her whole thing was just like, I loved it. She was just like, no, listen, he's your arch enemy. You kick his ass, not them.
Yeah.
And I like that she's they're really sticking her in that role. And in that character.
To have some Miko-isms in there. Just, you know, oh, Bulkhead, go, let's kick some butt. And he's like, I don't want to do that. And she just totally then turned 180 degrees and like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that stuff for her was a little more believable in this because it was more of like, she looks up to Bulkhead. So when, like in her eyes, like the Bulkhead that she knows and loves is would rush into this situation because that's his arch enemy. And like, this is the Bulkhead that I know would never back down. So it was like her image of Bulkhead was kind of being destroyed a little bit and she was really bummed about it. And I find that aspect of her a little more believable than the, I'm going to run into the battle and knowing that there might not, I'm going to hitchhike on the space bridge knowing that there might not be any way that I could ever get back. And, that's just me. It's probably the exact same character trait, but it was a little more believable in this just because it was, she has an image of what Bulkhead is or maybe even just what she wants him to be. And that kind of got a little bit diminished in her eyes and it kind of made her a little depressed.
Also, just as a brief aside, I'm not sure if this was like due to certain wardrobe choices, but when we saw the live script reading, Miko's voice actor looks frighteningly like a real life Miko. Like incredibly close. It was kind of freaky to watch because she was also the one who was getting up and doing a whole lot of body acting while doing her lines. And I was like, I think that you think you're in a live action show. I don't think that's a bad thing, but you are hella into this character.
And a shout out to our friend Andy, Cobra Commander TFW from Moonbase 2. When he found out that Miko's voice actor was actually a little bit older than him, and he saw her in person, he's got a huge crush on her now.
Aww.
Oh, that's so cute. But he saw her at the panel. He's like, I think he wasn't even thinking about it because he thought she was young when he found out that he wasn't as young as. So he's got a little bit of a crush. Kind of cute.
Andy!
Sorry, Andy.
My Andy is growing up so fast. Anyway, Bulkhead was a good presence in this episode. He gets lots of screen time, but it's not for any kind of poor reasoning. Gog, have you got another point you'd like to bring up?
Let's go what I was talking about before a little bit. Let's go into Starscream. Starscream basically going to Megatron on behalf of Breakdown, making an appeal to, we need to get our guy back. Megatron's like, nope. if he's so useless that he can get himself captured by a few meat bags, then he's not some guy that I need around. And the look on Starscream's face, like, it was like jaw-dropping, like, what?
Yeah.
Like, no, like, we can't leave him out there. And
I loved his reaction when he comes up. He's like, thanks to Soundwave's amazing ability. Soundwave just kind of gives him a silent Soundwave, like, F you, and just walks off.
Yeah.
And Starscream's all just ready. He's like, I'm ready to go and punish these fleshlings. And Megatron's are like, no. And Starscream's like, what? Like, I loved his sputter. It was so good.
Yeah. But there was just that, there was that initial when Megatron said no. Like, Starscream just was like, what?
Yeah.
And it almost seemed... It almost seemed to be too quick of a reaction to, because my first impression was like, oh, well, maybe, or at least after watching the episode at BotCon, was like, oh, well, Starscream obviously wants Breakdown because he needs his inner circle for when he confronts Megatron for the final time. His reaction was so fast, he almost makes you wonder if he was just outright surprised by Megatron's complete lack of care for his own people. Like, what?
I totally agree with that, actually, because if you think about what we saw of Starscream in the 5-part opener, that is, and all credit due to it, it is also the most forgettable part of the show because the show got so much better after the 5-parter. I remember that Starscream seemed to be, he was less devious for deviousness' sake and more devious because Megatron came back and was, you know, insane. And
he was even begging Megatron to escape the blast radius of the space bridge.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't want Megatron to die. He's like, get out of there! What are you doing?
And I'm seeing some of that Starscream again, thanks to this episode, in that moment where he was like, we're gonna go rescue our boy. And Megatron's like, no, and Starscream is just agog. He's like, but are you... You know, we can't... Starscream is like basically saying, like, there's a line in the sand we gotta draw. We can't just let these humans kidnap our boys, Breakdown. Like he says, Breakdown's a key player in what they're trying to do, and Megatron's like, if he gets captured, it's up to him to deal with it. And I like that because, again, this is what I said back when we saw the five-parter. This legitimizes Starscream's backstabbing of Megatron.
Absolutely. Because, and if you look, the only people that he's been devious towards are Megatron and Soundwave, who is basically Megatron by extension.
Yeah,
right.
So he's everyone else, he's completely open with them, like, look, yeah, Megatron needs to go, and you need to be on my side for this. Yeah. He's not stabbing anybody else in the back. He's trying to earn their loyalty, with the exception of him getting pissed at Knockout in that one episode. Yeah. But again, that was very open. There was no secrecy or backstabbing
It's like, that's also like setting up your power base. It seems like that's what Starscream's going for right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't have enough knowledge into the Decepticons of Prime to see, is this the normal method of how people move up and down in the world? You know, does an Erraticon or Viacon or whatever we're calling them this week, you know, is that how you actually get a name other than being, you know, random dude that gets blowed up in scene 4, you know, by outsmarting and backstabbing one of your fellow dudes? Or is this something that Starscream's just making the power play that, you know, in the five-parter, he didn't seem to want Megatron to die, and then he got a taste of power and, I really like that, and I'm going to do what it takes to go for that.
There's layers to it, for sure.
It does really kind of seem odd that he's openly recruiting to his side, so I wonder if maybe that's another show that's coming up, is Starscream tying everything together for a power play to maybe set Megatron up and, yeah, let's go fight the Autobots. Uh-huh, there they are. And then everybody takes two steps back and blasts Megatron. Or that's what Starscream's hoping for, and instead everybody takes three steps back and blasts Starscream, who's a step ahead still.
Well, the reason why I'm also so you know, kind of excited about this is that for the last little while, I did actually start having a fear that that side of Transformers Prime's Starscream was kind of vanishing, which was the open legitimization of why he would want to overthrow Megatron. So to see it sort of come back in a little ways in this episode was great for me, because I felt like, good, you know, they are still sticking to that, to what I'm seeing as the intended story arc for Starscream, which is like they aren't forgetting that in the five-parter he was built as a character who could take this path. So I really like that. And Steve Bloom, you know, especially I had no idea Steve Bloom was doing that voice all by himself. Having seen him at the script reading at BotCon, like, I thought that at least part of that rasp was effects'd in, but he's doing that entire voice from his own throat.
And really?
Yes. Like, he can just turn on that, like, not just that rasp, but that croak as well. I thought the croak and the rasp were at least, like, assisted somewhat, but he does that voice raw from his own mouth. And it's really cool to see. I'm sure a lot of people are kind of going like, yeah, I know, I think we kind of told you Steve Bloom might be sort of a talented voice actor at some point. But, you know, to see it in person was a big thing for me. So I'm also glad that we got a Voyager Starscream toy on the way, eventually. Aaron, have you got something you'd like to bring up?
Did my jokey bit, Fowler, I guess, is a movie guy, but then shortly falls asleep. I'm trying to think of any other points without a list here.
I do kind of enjoy when Fowler, I mean, it's a little bit odd, for sure. If it's going to be cited as a criticism, I'm not going to argue it, but I kind of enjoy when Fowler just, like, out of nowhere just turns completely wacky, and he's like, movie night! Yeah. I'm up for that! And you cut back a few minutes later, and he's just passed out on a couch like a little kid.
Yeah, because he had, like, arm flailed over the back, leg flailed over the back.
Yeah, yeah. Just, like, I don't know. The ludicrous nature of Fowler, I think what really helps is that it's still kept to a minimum in terms of how much time it takes up in this whole series.
Yeah.
So all we know of Fowler is he's a kind of a strange, goofy, angry, grumpy guy who sticks up for his pals and likes to fly airplanes in a business suit.
Yeah.
I kind of dig that. There was at the script reading again. Sorry, Aaron. At the script reading, there was actually a great line added to the episode about, like in the quote unquote deleted scene, there was an explanation I think about his habit of flying airplanes without a flight suit. Had to do with some kind of advanced technology or something. But oh, Fowler, don't cross the streams. What's something I can bring up? The animation. I always like to bring up the animation, and at BotCon, seeing it on a big screen, I think that I actually had a legitimate, like, this looks really friggin' cool moment of the circling shot around Bulkhead and Breakdown when they are back-to-back fighting off Mech. That was a really cool shot. And at the Hall of Fame dinner, when they showed that Transformers Prime kind of, what do you call it, a Zazz reel, I really liked that shot was featured in the action reel they were showing, because that was a really cool shot. Also, they really got across, because they were fighting human-sized dudes, they got across some really great scale, especially when Bulkhead broke into the mech base. You know, it was like, Marco! And you see him literally looking like a monster, smashing his way through the mech forces.
Yeah, and he even referenced that, too, because when they were coming back out with him in Breakdown, he goes, creature double feature!
Yeah,
so yeah.
It seemed to be directly. At least the person who was writing the script had that in mind,
for sure. I don't know. I just really liked the action sequence in this one because it literally hit a certain level of, and I hate, you know, this word is getting real broken in this day and age, but it hit a certain level of epic of just these two giant robots, primarily almost entirely through melee, fighting off like an army of humans. It was really cool, I thought. As always, this show, every episode, it seems, the animation team is getting better and better at what they do. And I'm really happy about that. The show does not look like it's going to be dated computer animation. It looks like it's going to be something that holds up for at least a couple years after it's finished its run. So props. And of course, speaking of animation, as we said before, Breakdown had some great emotive moments when he was strapped down to the operating table. And Silas, too, like a lot of the humans walking around can be real stilted looking. And so when I rewatched the episode, I was specifically watching in the opening scene when Silas and the other mech soldiers come out of the helicopter to pick which felled Transformer they're going to take home with them. It looked pretty good. And I'm really liking how they've designed Silas as a character model. His model plus Clancy Brown's voice and the way they're framing him, the way that he always moves with this real slow, deliberate pace, they're making him very legitimized as a supervillain. Like, literally a James Bond-style supervillain. And it's quite cool. Gog, have you got anything else you want to bring up?
Can't really think of anything from the episode offhand. There was maybe save it for the end, but there were a couple things we saw and heard at BotCon.
Yeah.
But off the top, go ahead and you guys have anything more, and I'll think. But I can't really think of anything.
Aaron, have you got anything?
Not off the top of my mind. The woes of not having my list with the little smartass comments in it.
Aww. Oh, poor list.
Yeah.
Just gonna take a quick scroll through the episode, I guess. What else was in this one? RC did have her great moment of reminding us all that she is, you know, a soldier first when she's like, "Why are we rescuing Breakdown?" And I really liked that even Optimus Prime, you know, he started off with a bit of a moral message about, you know, anyone can change and etc. But at the end of the day, you know, everyone kind of made it the thing. It's like, it's not really about saving Breakdown for the sake of saving Breakdown. You know, Miko tells Bulkhead, you got to save him, so you're the one who takes him down. And Prime is like, this is not so much about Breakdown. This is about preventing Mech from having a Transformer to dissect and study.
Yeah.
Because they are a threat. They are a real, true threat.
I'm glad that that is being played up a bit. You know, the third combative faction, instead of being passive like the minicons were, can lead to a whole lot of things like what this episode was of, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend at times. So it lets you have stories where you couldn't before.
I also kind of enjoyed just stemming off that, because I should have brought this up when we talked about Starscream, but I actually liked how, you know, he sort of heroically swooped in with a team of Erraticons and was just like, you know, we're here to save the day. All right, kill him. Like, it was kind of a fun little juxtaposition of how they showed up. And when they showed up, that actually did surprise me when we saw it at BotCon. I did not think Starscream and the Jet Drones were going to show up. I thought that was going to be the Autobots. And so when they arrived, I was like, whoa, this just had a twist again. So I quite enjoyed that. Gog, did you find your thing you were going to talk about?
No, oh, no, I was just going to go off of what you were saying.
Oh, go off what I said.
And now I can't remember.
No!
Well, I was going to say, the first one, I mean, again, we've said it before, but I'm glad of the fact that that Mech isn't like, oh, they're the evil humans, so naturally they're going to side with the Decepticons. It's it's a force that it's like a complete third faction. Neither the Autobots nor the Decepticons will side with them, and Mech isn't going to side with either of them either, and I hope it stays that way. But
well, they definitely drew a line in the sand in this episode, because the first thing that Mech does is kidnap a Decepticon but basically make enemies of the Decepticons.
Yeah. Oh, I remember what the other thing I was going to say is I'd say maybe, I don't know, maybe this is the movie bleeding into this too, but Prime's whole monologue of like, oh, I think, trying to remember what he said before, but it was like, just in this episode though, like the whole, you know, humans have the ability to whatever, and they're like, you mean breakdown? He's like, no. Or no, he's like, everyone has the ability to do something,
very, very,
and they're like,
narration-y kind of,
yeah. And it's like, breakdown, like, no, humans. And like, it was a little bit of the movie Prime, because like, and I think maybe in my mind they're kind of blending a bit, just because it's that Peter Cullen voice doing the same thing, but it's this whole, like, oh, it's like laying it on thick of, like, humans have such great potential, and, oh, we, you know, like, and he almost implied, like, I don't care about breakdown, we're never going to convert him, but the humans have good potential to be great, and it's like, okay. I mean, I'm a human, that's great. You know, thanks for giving me a bit of a shout out there, buddy. But it's like, we're not some special race of beings. I mean, the Cybertronians are, with the exception of having metal bodies, are not really any different from us. And the whole, like, we will serve the humans who have potential to be so great, and I love them and don't ever want to leave, because these humans are just beautiful creatures that have potential for good. And just stop, Prime. Just shoot something.
No, they're really cool dudes, honestly.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is, like, I think part of that is my brain, because we see that in, like, all the movie trailers for, like, all three movies, like, and especially at the end when Prime always gives his final monologue of,
we
are here, and the humans have such potential, and we keep seeing in the trailer, like, you know, you're on your own now, but I have faith that you can survive anything because you're human, and I just love saying human. And it's like, all the other characters in Prime are just so more interesting to me. Like, even at this point, even Bumblebee. I'm not a Bumblebee fan by any means, but it's like, give me something with Bumblebee in it. Just Prime, just stop talking, please.
This is a major tangent, but this whole thing of, like, the movie style Prime really loving humans just gave me some great ideas for stuff that'll never happen in the movie continuity. Like, one day Prime just snaps and he's like, I want to be a human. And then he just goes and cuts up a whole bunch of people and just, like, walks out of his.
Where's their skin?
Yeah, he just walks out covered in human skin, going, like, hello, fellow humans. I am Frank Optimus Prime. Fellow human. He's got, like, all their hair just, like, glued onto the top of his head. you're talking about. Yeah, the narration-y dialogue style. It's always going to be there, because it's also, I'm sure it is what is being directed out of Peter Cullen.
For sure, speech. Yeah.
So I certainly am not going to go like, oh, Peter Cullen, stop doing that, because, you know, a lot of people want him to speak like that. But it did get a little bit, I was happy I watched the episode again, because that speech he gives where he's like, not breakdown, like, it actually took me a little while to fully follow where he was going with that, because it's kind of like he's talking about breakdown, but then he's not, and then he just starts talking about humans again. And I was like,
yeah, and that was the whole purpose of why I brought it up. It just seems so strange to me, because he's talking about people making, and in the end, breakdown kind of did show signs of being able to do that. But if you listen to Prime, it just seems like he's already given up on the fact that any of that could happen. Like, no, the Decepticons are beyond anything, but the humans. It's like,
and then, like, breakdown shows up, like, hey, Prime, I thought I'd change sides. Prime just shoots him. He's like, you're not a human. Go be more human.
Yeah. Then that yeah, just exactly what you said. Like, at the first, you think he's talking about breakdown, and he's just like, nope.
And it's not like a clever...
That dude doesn't have any capacity for change.
It's not like a clever swap either. It's just literally like Prime just halfway through his sentence just kind of stopped talking and then started again. He's like, you see, breakdown is, I love the humans. They're wonderful. And then just, like, leaves. Like, what were we doing again? All right. I had one more thing I could bring up, which I thought was just kind of amusing to me. I don't think we've seen it for a while, but I like that when the Autobots popped out of the ground bridge, they did their classic, you know, for this one season show so far, thing where they all pop out driving us in a bit of a figure eight transform and then whip their guns out and just start pointing them everywhere.
They do it
where nobody is there waiting on the other end. Yeah.
Well, that's a,
dang,
I mean, that's
it,
a
one time this is going to be so cool.
Yeah, that's a military thing. You secure your landing zone. That's the same thing that they do in the military when you have a landing zone, especially if it's in unknown or enemy territory. You drop a quick group of people in, and they circle around and make sure nobody's there, and then the rest come in. And they're kind of doing a quick version of that. Like, they're dropping out. They have no idea what's around them, and they're securing their initial area.
I do like that when they come out in their vehicle mode, they also immediately swerve and do at least a half figure eight to avoid any potential incoming fire. The part that makes it amusing to me is that when they actually do whip all their guns out, they also just pull these real hardcore wide-legged action movie stances.
Yeah.
And there's never anyone there.
Yeah. So they quickly point their guns in like five different directions. Yeah. Like, RC's like,
and then they just kind of all stop, like, okay, anyway. Yeah. I'm always waiting for one of them to just
point
it out.
About those humans.
Like RC just go like, look, man, I feel stupid. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's kind of cool, though, because...
It makes total sense when you
yeah, it's right. Giving them a bit of a... Yeah. It makes them feel like a military unit, and they're, like, somewhat tactical and stuff, instead of just... Kind of just driving in and be like, all right, let's look at the radar. Like, yeah it's neat.
I hope that they never do that and actually have someone on the other end. I think it's better that every time they do it, there's nobody there.
They should
there.
Do it, and then because they only ever make, like, a half circle. So then, there's an entire squad of Eradicons behind them, and they're like, oh, it's secure. And the Eradicons like, what? And just start shooting them all in the back.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. Every time it happens, I kind of smile and start chuckling. Because I don't even think it's a canned animation. It's just that it looks so alike every time, and Prime is always, like, so intense. He pops his faceplate up, even. He's like, pops a faceplate down. All right. Let's go and search for things. Do either of you have anything else you want to bring up from this episode?
I think we've covered it pretty well.
All right.
Like I said, there's a couple of maybe some BotCon things to quickly mention. But
let's bring those up.
Well, we saw a bit of a, like, because you were talking about the reel that they showed us, like the action reel.
Yes.
And there were a couple things on there. I mean, I don't think there was any really big reveals. But the one that really did catch my eye was towards the end of that reel, we saw Jack's mom, and looks like she's talking with Jack or something, and she looks up and sees all the Autobots in their robot modes, doesn't really seem to be afraid, but she's just kind of like, oh yeah, Hey there.
Yeah, that was kind of mysterious. So, that clip. Yeah. And the other major clip I remember from that reel, again, this is not really, this is even less of a potential spoiler, is RC and Arachnid leaping at each other over the backdrop of a full moon, which was totally anime. Yeah.
And I think the next episode after this may be Arachnid centric. I'll have to look and see real quick, but
yeah, my recording didn't have a next time on.
Mine didn't either.
Okay.
It's the mashup.
I'm just looking at the quick solicit, but just quick spoiler in case someone wants to know what the theme of the episode is. Episode 17 after this is called Crisscross. Not will make you want to jump. And it says, Arachnid teams up with Mech to get revenge on RC and Jack.
Ooh.
So, a little bit of the crossing the faction there.
Only Arachnid, as far as we know. Only Arachnid, though,
because so far she is her own, completely independent, kind of like Lockdown.
She is the fourth faction, so...
Yeah, in a way, yeah. But, I wonder if, that's gonna be interesting. Maybe, there's some room for betrayal on either side there. It makes me wonder how that would play out. Because Arachnid is not really one to be trusted, and I don't think Mech is either.
No, definitely not.
We will see. Especially, okay,
wait a second. Well, Mech has helicopters, don't they?
Yeah.
Yes. And all that talk about Chimera, We'll see. But my guess, at least with the part with Jack's mom, makes me wonder if that's maybe something from, because that seems like the big reveal, like characters kind of coming out of the hiding, makes me wonder if that might be like a clip from like the season finale or something, but or at least approaching that final arc. But
I don't know.
We'll see. We still have. There's full 26 episodes in this season, right?
Yep.
So we still have 10 more episodes. We got a lot of time to go.
Yeah, it's nice.
We still have like a third of a season. It seems like so much of the stuff I've been watching lately is like 13 episodes and stuff, and it's just like when we finally get like a full 26 episode season, it just seems to go on forever, and that's a good problem.
Yeah.
Good problem is how I would put it. There's so much room for growth on this show. There's so many places it can go. I'm really enjoying it. It's always going to be compared to previous shows. And I was just thinking about it when I was getting on Skype today, and I was like, with this show, it's something where I would definitely say, it's not what I'd call like a successor to Animated. It's an heir to Animated. Animated has come by. It's got a little bit of gas left in it, but it's passed its biggest chair over to this show, and this show is sitting in that chair like a proper son.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, it's... And like a lot of first seasons for anything, you set the groundwork, and Animated did that as well.
Yeah.
I would even say that I was still, maybe by this point in Animated, I was a little bit iffy as far as how I felt, and it took a while because... The show laid some groundwork, it made some characters, you got to learn the characters, and then as it got into its last couple of seasons, it really started taking advantage of the introductions and the story points and everything that it laid out and grew upon it, and any good show will do that, and this is definitely a first season, like they're doing stuff like we'll just have a standalone episode where it's kind of a goofy plot point, and But it introduces more characters and stuff, and then later on, then now they have a foundation and they can continue that and take little seeds that were planted and go further. So I hope that's what's going to happen. This is definitely a first season.
Yeah.
But it has. I'm really enjoying it so far, and I think it has potential to be something much greater than it is now. And I hope to see it that happen.
Oh yeah,
I'm looking forward to the finale, because that's where Animated really shone. Was when it, you know, its whole first season, a lot of people would go like, "Oh, where's the Decepticons? Where's this? Where's that?" And it was all a payoff for the fact that the end of the first season was the return of Megatron in a real big, real awesome way. That two-parter is still one of my favorites, as far as Transformers cartoons go, especially season finales. So I think that's going to also be where Prime gets its real scrutiny, is when they hit their first, you know, major finale moment. What are they going to do? Are they going to do something that is as, you know, exciting as Megatron Rising yeah. was.
And I'm very pleased that they didn't, as I've said this before probably many times, but I'm very happy that they didn't leave the Megatron Returns for the season finale, because I think a lot of people expected that, and kind of myself included, that I was, they're going to wait and bring Megatron back. It's like, oh, Megatron's back, Decepticons, what? Oh, season finale cliffhanger. And, well, Megatron's already back. So, and they're just chugging as if nothing happened. And it's all it is a character point for both Megatron, especially, mostly Starscream. It's most like Megatron's whole death has really been nothing more than a character plot device for Starscream. Mm-hmm. So if you, I mean, in actuality, because there's been no other consequence for Megatron returning other than Prime saying, "Oh crap," a couple of cool scenes and dialogues, and it's mostly Starscream growing as. Maybe not necessarily character growth, but definitely character progression.
Well, I mean, is growing into a treacherous a-hole growth?
Could be.
I mean, it's change. It's changing the character from where he was to.
Sure, yeah. He's definitely something on a new path.
What did his parents always want from him? You know.
Yeah. What do you want to be when you grow up, Starscream?
A backstabber. I think my like at this point, like, I'm going to bring this up, I think, more often as we keep doing these, as we get closer to the end of the first season of Prime. But I'm so happy to say that I think it's safe for me to say we have had now two really good Transformers cartoons in a row. And it's been a long time since you could say that. We had Animated, which was great. We have Prime, which is turning out pretty great. And I'm happy about that. I think Prime especially, Animated had a big goal in that it let us have something that was really great that was also entirely not the movie.
Yeah.
And Prime, on the other hand, is something that it's big drive for me is that it's showing us what we're gonna have when the movies have, you know, taken a break.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm also so happy it's turning out this well, because at one, you know, after next week. Isn't it like next week when the movies come out? After next week,
yeah,
Prime is going to be Transformers as far as media goes for the next is while.
It, I think it's a week from today when we're recording this. It's on a week Wednesday from today. Night.
Yeah, so very soon Prime is going to be the only Transformers media, and I feel okay about that.
That's kind of refreshing. Yeah,
I feel okay about that. I was so worried because I was like that was because Animated's big thing was how is this going to offer us something that isn't the movie. Prime's big thing was. Is this going to be good because this is going to be all that we've got for a little while?
Right.
And I mean, I'm certainly not saying that it's not as though the live action movies have been the crux of Transformers entertainment for the last couple of years, because they totally haven't. But, you know, that's where Animated always, you know, Animated's thing was, even if Animated, you know, ends, there's still going to be a movie, franchise is still going to go. Now we've hit the end of the movies for the time being. Prime is kind of like, you've got to carry, you know, the aftermath.
Well, it's going to, because there are a lot of people and probably a lot of kids that are just into Transformers because of the movies, not because of Animated, not because of G1, not because of Prime. It's because of the movies. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with our fandom and people that are hanging around message boards and all that fun stuff when the movie retention. Stuff starts. Yeah. When the movie stuff starts to fade away, especially with Prime being on at least for me, a super premium channel, and that I have to go for like the top cable package in order to watch it, short of, you know, Western legal download methods.
Sounds like you got some fist in your mouth there.
Yeah, yeah. and unfortunately,
you mean you don't get every cable channel for free?
No, I don't.
I do.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
You know,
get a drive for free on roads. God, no,
not to reference and quote myself, but when I was quoted in an LA Weekly article about BotCon, I mentioned that two of the biggest draws for Transformers, they asked me, like, you know, did you think the Transformers movies have had a huge amount of growth for the fandom? I said they certainly have, but another thing to look at is that Animated had a big draw for anyone who wanted to see something that wasn't the movie. And right. So animated has its own section of retention, I think, from the last three or four years. And where Prime is definitely doing something right is that it seems it's offering visuals that will maintain retention for folks who want to think about the movie first. And it's delivering a solid cartoon with, you know, especially with characters like Bulkhead, but it's delivering a solid cartoon for those who want to be part of the retention that come off of folks who jumped on because animated looked really cool. So I think it's doing a really good job of carrying two sticks, basically, and not right. dropping either of them so far. I, of course, look forward to the eventual sequel, Transformers Creo. I want to see just
Transformers. You want to see the Transformers Creo video game.
They just explode when they transform, and then the whole episode is them rebuilding into the other.
Yeah, well, Creo definitely has something in common with Prime. It's a bit of an amalgamation of different stuff.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Prime definitely takes a little bit from the movie franchise, but it also mixes it in with a little bit of the other, and that's kind of what Creo's doing.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of weird seeing Truck Megatron with a G1 face, same with Sentinel Prime. He's definitely got the movie body, and he's got this weird kind of almost Transformers Prime-ish face. So, yeah, there is a little bit of crossover there in the same way with Creo.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really excited. I mean, I'm also excited because next week I'm going to finally. And I don't mean this in like a super positive or super negative, but next week we're going to finally see Dark of the Moon and get over that hump and move into the aftermath. And I'm excited to see what that aftermath is.
So do you think it'll be like Revenge of the Fallen and we'll end up doing two movie roundtables?
Well, it depends what happens with Dark of the Moon. Like I want to give it as much coverage as possible, especially because it's the last live action movie for a little while. And as far as we know, and I want to give it a fair shake. And I'm hoping that coming out of that movie, I'll be excited to talk about it. Kind of like, okay, we're going way off primetime topic here, but this is a little parallel. If it turns out a good movie, that's a great thing. But even if it turns out to be a kind of a crappy movie, that's still fun. My parallel for that is I just saw Green Lantern on the weekend. Green Lantern was definitely not the most solid movie in the world. It's a movie you can rip to shreds if you want to. But the thing that Green Lantern does that I really liked is that even if you do that, it's fun to do it with Green Lantern. And so I'm hoping that, you know, if Dark of the Moon turns out a great movie, I'll be happy. If it turns out a movie that is fun to rip apart, then I'll like that too. The worst thing is when it's a movie that is not fun to dissect, where you just kind
of
go,
yeah, like, and we definitely have an advantage with this movie, because I think with Revenge of the Fallen, we all legitimately had our hopes up for it to be a good movie.
Yeah,
right.
And at least on my account, I felt completely let down. But I think with most people, at least the ones who like myself, who didn't really like Revenge of the Fallen that much, I think our defenses are up. So if it is bad, we are prepared to walk out of the theater and say, yeah, it still wasn't great.
Right.
And we can have a little bit more fun instead of just having to feel like we have to find something to justify the pain that we just went through.
I've gotten to see like X-Men and Green Lantern with a bunch of friends, including Geronimus. And I've had a lot of people ask me, oh, for this Transformers movie, you know, how are you going to feel about that? And I've had to repeatedly give them I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know where it's going to go. But my biggest hope is it ends up being like either of those two movies. Yeah, there are some issues for the people that are really deep into the mythos and know that this shouldn't have been this, it should have been that. But if it can come off as a good movie for Joe Schmo that knows Transformers 1 and Transformers 2, then it'll have its prospects. But
I think the lowest bar I will set for that movie is I want it to be at least as fun as Green Lantern was, which was a big dumb movie full of inaccuracies, but I still really enjoyed watching it. I'm probably not going to see it again, but I had fun seeing it in the theater. It didn't feel like I wasted my money.
Right.
So that's what I'd like out of it. Anyway, we're not in prime time anymore, so let's put the can on this one. We'll be back. I'm guessing next week we got another episode. I haven't checked.
Let me check.
Yeah, let's see. Because I've been horrible at keeping up with when these programming breaks happen. I mean, it's very fortuitous because I've been trying to catch a Tuesday night as I mentioned before, a Tuesday night stage show for the last while. So this, it was nice to have that break while I was really getting into that.
Yes, the next episode says it airs June 20th. Yes.
Boom. Yes.
And then after that, episode 18 comes on July 9th. So it looks like we get a couple weeks. So we do have an episode next week, and then a couple week break, and then July 9th is the 18th.
It's a really weird thing to have these, like, brief programming breaks. I don't mind them as a podcast recorder, but I am kind of confused by how they're spreading it out like that.
Yeah,
yeah, but after that 2 week break, because we had this week's, we get next week's, a 2 week break, and then at least three consecutive episodes.
Boom, boom, boom. All right. Well, we'll be back next week then with some more prime time. I hope that you guys who are tuning in are having a good time with these. And as I always said, if you got friends who were turned off of Prime by some earlier episode, please tell them it got better, because it is always getting better. I'm really happy to say that. I'm really happy that we got a good show going on for when Dark of the Moon drops. Oh, man. I don't know. I feel all jazzed. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. That's been me. That's been Gog. That's been Aaron. We are Prime Time, and we are Prime Out!
What the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators, and they're here to stay.